normally are not attracted to downtown, and if you walk downtown often, as I do almost every day, you can see that maybe people would select another venue to shop in and feel, you know, a little more comfortable. So I don't know if it will have an impact or not, but...
Now, there is a new group forming. Have you read this week's Metro?
No, I haven't gotten it yet.
There's a mention in the Metro about a group called the Coalition for the Beach Area, headed by or including Eric Larson, Ken Patel, Pravin Patel, Daryl Darling, Matt Twisselman, Robert Stagnaro, and perhaps Marciano Cruz are the names. I don't know how accurate this is, but members of this new group, which, from what I can gather from the article, supports and perhaps shares your position in a number of ways. Have you heard about this group?
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
I was invited to a meeting a week or so ago. I don't know if it was that group or not, but I was unable to attend. So I didn't. So I have not heard that group name before.
You probably saw some of the literature being distributed by Doug Rand. Doug is a pretty eloquent speaker. What's your impression of what he says? I heard his speech, and I've looked at his writing. I wish I had it in front of me so I could kind of present it to you more particularly, but do you have any take on this, on him generally?
Well, I'm sorry that he is so adamant against it. He sees no good in it, and I think there is some good. I think it's going to be give and take, and being against the whole thing is not going to get us any place. We're going to be standing still just like we have for the past 15 years.
So you don't think, let's say, that if this thing is delayed beyond the election as a sort of a referendum, because it certainly will be a referendum, there are candidates running who are specifically opposed to this plan, if the public doesn't want it, they will vote these people in. But you feel that, you know, wouldn't it be fairer to wait until at least the election to see how the public feels about this plan?
No. From my point of view, it wouldn't be, because if you talk to people who live in other parts of town, they want to see something change in the beach lot. They don't even go down there. They think it's, you know, a lot of them don't even go to the beach. And they want to see change. Many of them feel, actually, that it should go back to being what it was when we were kids and to come and stay overnight and, you know, in peaceful and quiet and safe environment. So, I don't know if they want to tear down everything, but that has been mentioned. They should just start all over again. And I think a lot of people who live out, you know, in Santa Cruz, but outside that area, have that feeling that major improvements need to be accomplished.
Well, certainly there's been some more investigation into some of the problems, and certainly people are beginning to speak up now in a way that they weren't before, both, at least for the first time in my experience, proponents of the beach blast plan as well as opponents. I mean, I often hear from opponents at city council meetings, but at that planning commission, that was really the first time that I saw seven or eight people actually standing up supporting the beach blast plan. And I guess part of it was, well, because it was organized that way, or maybe they felt this was an important hearing. I know that there were three main groups I saw, namely the Chamber of Commerce connected group, the Seaside Company connected group, I could only really count one resident. It was the fellow who manages the hotel or the motel who spoke. And generally speaking, all the other residents that spoke, and correct me if I'm wrong, were opposed to the plan. At least I've never heard a resident of the beach flats speaking up supporting the plan. Although you are a resident of Beach Hill, and you are speaking up supporting the plan.
And I think that there are many other people in this neighborhood who support the plan as well.
And you think that, are they reluctant to speak up, or...?
No, they're just busy. They don't feel that it's maybe that important an issue, and they have, you know, they're earning a living, and they're just not connected enough to really do something.
And of course, then there are those who believe that this is sort of a done deal because the council majority does support this. It looks like a 5-2 vote at the moment on the issue, and the question of you know, any kind of debate is really academic. If you have your votes already, why do you have other things you need to do, come to a council meeting, if in fact the cards have already been laid down, so to speak? So that could be one reason. So, what about the concern and criticism that the Seaside Company itself, that the actual reality, regardless of the good works of Charlie Canfield and during the earthquake, I was hearing some comments about that after the city council meeting by someone who was a paid employee of his, but she nonetheless felt sincerely about it, that he had, you know, gone into the hotels or the housing complex and given out blankets to poor people, and, you know, been concerned, as many of us were after the earthquake, that a beach area amusement park just historically in Santa Cruz and elsewhere creates crime. It creates drug trafficking. It creates just that kind of milieu simply by its very nature. I mean, I'm frankly an amusement park person. I used to love amusement parks when I was a kid, less so now. But that this is really part of the package that it goes along with it because of the, you know, the many kinds of folks that come, because of the traffic, because of the huge mixture of people. Well, what's your take on that?
Well, I think that there are a lot of amusement parks that do not generate crime. And I don't think it's people passing through sometimes who are the drug users and buyers, but they are not the ones, the tourists are not the ones selling drugs. So I don't know that I would buy into that argument.
They're usually the customers, I would say, right? I mean, it's the fact that there's such a huge number of people who come to that area. But
well, if you would come down here and watch the traffic, you would have to be very knowledgeable to know even how to get into the area where they sell drugs.
Really?
Because it's on the perimeter that the traffic comes in and leaves.
So you think it's not in any way connected with the boardwalk itself?
Not particularly, no. I think the drug traffic would be there regardless of whether there was a boardwalk or not.
Have you studied the financial figures in terms of the amount of money the city is putting out in terms of value to the Seaside Company and how long it will take the city to recoup that money over a period of time? I've heard some rather staggering figures on that. I wondered if you had any sense of...
I haven't delved into that at all.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's fair enough. I haven't either. I've just, you know, I know what the arguments I've heard, at least on one side. I've been trying to get Scott Kennedy to talk about this issue in a debate with someone for, you know, since time immemorial, and I can't get him to do it. But perhaps, you know, with this new group, and perhaps with the fact that other people are speaking up on both sides of the issue, we can get a more, you know, reasoned debate.
Mm-hmm.
Really get these issues addressed.
I think that would be valuable.
Oh, yeah.
Very valuable, rather than this, whatever you did, the attitude that we're trying to deal with now.
Were there comments that I made that you found particularly either offensive or false or misguided that you'd like to address in that speech I gave at City Council?
Well, Robert, you know, I don't remember. And
my comments were not memorable? What are you saying?
There were so... there comes a time when you just,
They aren't coming to take me away, that's
okay.
Outside.
Sometimes, you know, I think your comments are wrong, and, but I don't remember anything specific.
So there were no outrageous lies that stood out?
No, I don't think you lie.
I try not to.
I think you, I think sometimes you misunderstand or have been influenced by people who maybe do not have a tremendous amount of integrity.
Mm-hmm. Any comments on the racism brouhaha around Phil Bear?
Yeah, I do have thoughts and comments, but I just assume not share them at this time.
Do you think that racism motivates any of the opponents of the Beach Flats plan?
Not at this point, no. But I will say I did completely agree with Don Lane's letter to the Metro, and I sent in...
a letter yourself?
An email the day following that, the day it appeared, and, applauding him for speaking out and saying it as I also remember it. And he, of course they never published my letter, but they published two letters that slammed Don Lane.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Well, if you want to send me a copy of your letter, I'll be happy to read it over the air if you'd like.
No, that's okay. You know, it's past history now. I think it was a month ago.
Well, the issue is still alive. For instance, you may recall Eric Larson's comments at the Planning Commission. He talked about racist landlords fighting the Beach Flats plan. It almost developed into a brouhaha in the corridor outside.
No, I missed that, Jeff.
Yeah, that was out front, and that was out back during the Planning Commission meeting. So you know, if you, I think it's a diversity issue. I think the issue has to be around, does this Beach Flats plan meet the needs of the area? Is it the best plan we can have under the circumstances? Is there a better plan that could go into place in a reasonable period of time if we don't accept this one?
And, okay, let's see. My feeling is that it's a plan. It's an actual plan, the first one we've had. And I think it's time to move forward and make some changes.
So, but you might be sympathetic to a second plan if it were presented to you.
Not if it's going to take another 10 years to get it through.
How about another year?
Maybe. But it has to be something spectacular and doable.
What opponents should do is they should present for proponents an alternate plan that they propose. And a timeline on which that plan would work.
Well, this issue has been going around for so long that it seems like everyone should have had an opportunity way before this to get involved and respond. So I just assume, let's move. Let's vote on it and move ahead.
We're talking to, let me get this right, Geraldine Shelley, is that correct?
Yes.
And Geraldine has been a resident of the Beach Hill since 1967. She's been giving us a pro-Beach Flats redevelopment plan perspective. And if anyone has any comments, I don't think we have a phone line yet during this show. We will have, hopefully, by next Wednesday, Wednesday the 19th, when people can call in. But if you have any comments on Geraldine's plan and you want to put them on tape, you can call my machine at 423-4833. That's 423-HUFF. For the numerically impaired, 423-4833, and let me know what you think of what you've heard here. I don't doubt, Geraldine, you're going to get a lot of criticism.
I'm sure.
But I appreciate, that's what the show is about, and that's what this debate is about, is airing the differences of opinion so we can come to some enlightened understanding.
Okay, well, thank you, Robert, and it was nice running into you out there at Cabrillo.
Yeah, and the play wasn't bad either.
Okay. I'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And the crabs are crazy, they scuttle back and forth, the sand is burning. And the fish take flight and scatter from the side, their course is turning. As the seagulls rest on the cold cannon nest, the sea is churning. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. The fishermen sweat, they're pausing at their nets, the days are burning. As the warships sway and thunder in the bay, loud in the morning. But the boy on the shore is throwing pebbles no more, he runs a warning that the Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. The streets are still, there's silence in the hills, the town is sleeping. And the farmers yawn in the gray silver dawn, the fields they're keeping. As the first troops land and step into the sand, the flags are weeping. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. The unsmiling sun is shining down upon the singing soldiers. In the cloud dust world, they whistle at the girls, they're getting bolder. Ah, the old women sigh, think of memories gone by, they shrug their shoulders. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. Ready for the tricks, their bayonets are fixed, now they are rolling. And the tanks make tracks past the trembling sacks where fear's unfolding. All the young wives afraid turn their backs to the parade with babes they're holding. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. A bullet cracks the sound, the The army hits the ground, the snipers fall in. So they open up their guns, 1,000 to 1, no sense in stalling. He clutches at his head and totters on the edge. Look now, he's falling. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. In the red plaza square, the crowds come to stare. The heat is leaning, and the eyes of the dead are turning every head to the widow screaming. But the soldiers make a bid, giving candy to the kids. Their teeth are gleaming. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. Up and down the coast, the generals drink a toast. The wheel is spinning, and the cowards and the whores are peeking through the doors to see who's winning. But the traitors will pretend that it's getting near the end when it's beginning. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. And the crabs are crazy. They scuttle back and forth. The sand is burning. And the fish take flight and scatter from the side, their course is turning. As the seagulls rest on the cold cannon nest, the sea is churning. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo.
And that was, of course, Phil Oakes, Santo Domingo, which is, of course, about the U.S. invasion of the Dominican Republic back in 1965. But we could update it to Chiapas in 1998, although, of course, U.S. troops don't appear. Their surrogates appear. Their proxies appear. Their School of the Americas trained battalions appear. And that's a foreign matter, but one that concerns all of us. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, and I'm your host, Robert North. We have a two-hour show today from 6 to 8. Got another hour remaining. In the studio with us are homeless activist Linda Lemaster and a special surprise guest, David Silva. Linda has been listening to this interview. I guess so has David. The Beach Flats proponent, of the Beach Flats redevelopment plan. And we're a little pressed for time here because both our guests have to leave shortly, so we're going to move directly to your reactions, Linda, to what you heard from Geraldine, as well as your own thoughts on the Beach Flats redevelopment, and then we'll go to David for his.
Thank you, Robert. Well, I guess your listeners are going to have to sort out my reaction. I was listening carefully, but I think I'm going to say the same thing I was thinking before I heard it. As I was saying earlier, I don't think the plan is much of a plan. I think it's a fake dog and pony show. I was at the city council when it was first unveiled to council members, and even though they had something like 10 different staff and VIPs introducing little chunks of it a few minutes apiece, it's mostly a fake out to call it an integrated plan. But more important, what is there as a plan just doesn't give a shit about the concept of community. And it does, as our city's been doing a lot since the earthquake, invest a lot of support to big business and corporate development.
Now, wait a minute now. Aren't all the social services funded? This is the Mike Rodkin argument. Social services funded by the kind of taxes and tax dollars that Charlie Canfield's amusement park and these so-called big businesses bring in? I mean, where would all the low housing programs and the programs to help folks with AIDS and the program to needle exchange and all the other programs that are funded by the city and so far? We have a reaction from David.
The needle exchange is not funded by anyone.
Wait a minute. We lost our mic there for a minute.
The needle exchange is not funded by any government entity whatsoever. And also, perhaps they throw a little bit of that money towards some of those problems, but it is rampant corporates take the money and run, and bad business that is causing the ills of our society, and they're paying minuscule amount of what they should be paying for the problems that they're creating. I mean, they're polluting, creating poverty, creating the poverty gap is wider. They're creating the problems, and it's, so they create much more cost than benefit.
Right. Well, it certainly is true that the corporations are paying much less taxes than they were 40 years ago, and that the real wages have dropped in the last 20 years for the average person. But again, the issue here, Linda, I guess that. Who's going to pay for these developments? And let me put it this way: does the beach flats need any changes? Does it need any help?
Well, I think everybody who's ever tried to go there, especially on a weekend, knows that there's help needed in the traffic department, no matter what their aesthetics. The things I'm going to say that are critical of the plan, I admit, take some of my values and aesthetics into account, and mine just don't square with Charlie Canfield's. But given that prejudice, The idea of putting La Bahia right on Beach Street, I mean, granted it'll have a nice view, and in the process screw up the view and equity in the homes of the people around and behind that, but it's the wrong place to put a so-called convention or conference center. If, and I think this is pretty hypothetical or unlikely, if people are going to want to come to Santa Cruz for business conventions, they're not going to want to get stuck in the traffic in the beach. And no matter how many layers or tiers you put in the proposed parking structure, it's not going to resolve the parking into the future. I personally doubt if it's going to resolve the need for parking we have now. But so I think almost anywhere else in town, certainly somewhere near an arterial, not the worst traffic in the whole city, would be a better place to put a convention center. I don't particularly feel scared about the idea of a bigger amusement park ride being noisier, because I find the weekend noise kind of refreshing. I live within earshot of that. But the plan isn't genuinely integrated with the neighborhoods that feed into the beach flats area, and except for a proposed and unfunded extra road dumping into potential parking for the amusement park that's not funded, but it's talked about in the plan. It does nothing to integrate that community with the other communities, like the neighborhood where I live, which is also screwed up parking-wise and traffic-wise, or the neighborhood that's being invented, at least on paper, which they're calling south of Laurel, where the old depot used to be. They're talking about putting parking there. That would be a site where a convention center might be viable. And historically, it's a nice, I mean, we're kind of like paving over some history instead of bringing it back up. What I liked at the presentation was the ancient history of the beach flats. What I don't like about the plan is the arrogance that leaves the Coastal Commission out of the loop and is ignoring a lot of neighborhoods. Now, Eastsiders are getting organized about the fact that it's not just going to impact Ocean Street or any other ingress to the beach if they do that kind of development, but it's going to affect everybody in the city. And if all the neighborhoods start reacting like Eastsiders are, they will have to get serious and realistic about the plan. My final concern is the housing part is just hogwash. As Rutkin has pointed out in public, talk about renovating the homes of the people who are going to be displaced is just talk. There's no financial underwriting. And this is absurd. If Charlie Canfield himself were to put down 15% of what it would take to put some decent housing in there, regardless of the plan, there are nonprofit mortgage bank type entities in the state who never come to Santa Cruz because they can't get that little bit of private or public sector buy-in to start a project. And we need to do that. And I mean, if we're going to live with the idea of just displacing families en masse, there's over 240 families there that we know of. There are people there that can't afford to be counted. And according to Mary James of the Housing Authority, 14 of these families qualify for help for a displacement program that they're talking about that doesn't really exist either. So my biggest beef about the plan, the way it's presented, is the housing. And behind that is just a stupid aesthetic.
The housing, of course, is the key issue that I think is relevant to those who are properly concerned with the main topic of the show, which is civil rights for the poor. I mean, the other topics actually concern other neighborhoods and people who are relatively well off, who just don't want to see their neighborhoods deteriorating and the traffic overwhelming them and the city giving up valuable property and concessions to a large corporation that doesn't seem to be giving back too much in return. I'd like to say that in this discussion, we have two rather strong opponents of the three, counting myself, of the Beach Flats redevelopment plan. And if anyone wishes, who's listening to this show, who favors the Beach Flats development, to come on the air and speak in favor of the plan, I would be happy to have you on the air. We have our show at 11 o'clock on Sunday mornings from 11 to 1:30, and of course on Thursdays from 6 to 8. If you can't make those times, I'll be happy to interview you by phone, as I did Geraldine Shelley. We'd love to have a real debate on this issue, and it seems it's really hard to arrange because proponents have this thing sewn up in terms of a 5-2 majority on the city council, and other than Geraldine, nobody seems to feel they have to say a word about this in a public place in a fashion that can really be a significant debate. Now, hopefully, we have read in the Metro Santa Cruz of a new group forming the Coalition for the Beach Area, numbering among its other luminaries Eric Larson, Scott Kennedy, Mike Rotkin, Daryl Darling, and so forth, that any of these gentlemen or any women involved with this group are welcome to come on the air and talk about this issue. I attempted to contact this group before the show began. I called Eric Larson, and I believe I spoke to his wife, and he was out, and I invited him to leave a phone number, so we don't really have a phone number to contact them. Now, I see my guests are looking at their watches, and very prominently so, pressuring the host. David Silva, you are in the midst of a time crunch. We are intending, by the way, to present a segment from Phil Baer, and we will do this later in the show. But right now, I'd like to hear from you both on the Beach Flats issue, and on also, you are pissed. I can see that. You are angry about something. You have the Metro Santa Cruz yesterday's issue in your hand. What ails you, son?
Yes, Robert, I am very angry. For those of you who stopped reading the Metro Santa Cruz, whether you believe it to be a right-wing populist organ or whatever reason, I recommend that you pick it up this time and turn to page 11 in the news under hate crimes. It seems that hate crimes are a joke to the Metro Santa Cruz. I've had two friends, one very close friend, murdered in hate crimes, two separate hate crimes this past year. The Jewish cemeteries have been desecrated several times. The Catholic cemeteries are now being desecrated. The World Christian Order of the Creator, which is a money front and recruiting group, dared showed up at the gay pride parade. They were briskly escorted by some pretty strong butch gay men from the scene. We've been meeting with the sheriff and the chief of police, who are also very concerned about the new influx of Ku Klux Klan into this area. And we've had several rallies and meetings, and we've been opening this up, especially to youth. And the youth have been telling us, as Santa Cruz High students will tell you, you cannot get on any given day from Santa Cruz High School to Pacific Avenue without being approached with a white racist piece of literature or recruitment spiel. This is a reality in Santa Cruz, but it's and the news seems fit to take a phrase that was used in a survey that the Santa Cruz Action Network put out to try to see what is important to its members. They use the phrase making Santa Cruz a hate-free city, and so they decided that that's real over politically correct language or something. But I think they're overly hyper, unfunny, political incorrectness, absolutely incorrectness in making a joke out of this issue is to be shamed. It is not to be tolerated. We either have to have a front page apology, which I probably don't, or we need to start picketing. I'm talking about the Black Men's Association. I'm talking about the NAACP. I'm talking about all gay men. Every gay person in this town has known a person who has either been murdered or physically violated, and every gay person in this town knows what a hate crime is. Every black person knows what a hate crime is. Every Jewish person knows what a hate crime is. Every homeless person knows what a hate crime is. You know, the hate crimes are not just what's on the verge of bubbling up all over the United States. They are in Santa Cruz County. And if Metro Santa Cruz, which has put itself recently up as a mediator of the progressive argument, the progressive dialogue, thinks that they can make fun of hate crimes and get away with it, they are sadly mistaken. I believe that whoever did this little cleverness, to use this bad, limp humor against political correctness, this cleverness in order to make a joke out of hate crimes, or to result in making a joke out of hate crimes, which has a very bad effect. I mean, there's been a lot of work in trying to educate people. Now, if people can go around and start making jokes about it, how much further are we put back? I mean, they might as well put swastikas on their cover, as far as I'm concerned, or stamp a swastika on the asshole that wrote this. You're not going to get away with it. I'm calling for all people to contact the NAACP, to contact your human rights organization, whether it be United Nations Association, and the human rights. You know, there's a lot of talk about environmental issues, and there's a lot of talk about civil rights issues and homeless issues, but the human rights community has been very, very active and doing a lot of meeting and doing a lot of peace works and organizing the religious community, and I'm calling for all of to now come out and say we will not tolerate this kind of crap out of Metro Santa Cruz. It's not funny. It's not funny. People are dying and being murdered. Baby buggies are being kicked over. A man from Santa Cruz was one of the three men that attacked that couple in San Francisco and kicked over that black baby buggy and beat up the black man and woman. It was a man from Santa Cruz. So wake up, get your head out of your ass or out of the sand.
And that was David Silva talking about the Metro Santa Cruz.
Page 11.
If you're interested in contacting an organization, David, looks like he's off. You can always leave a message here with the Huff Line. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom at 423-4833, 423-HUFF. I myself have often found the Metro to be sort of a sneers at people who want to do. Who are concerned with civil rights issues. Myself, of course, they voted me the most irritating man in Santa Cruz for, what is it, 2 years running. I think I got the silver this year. It was a joke to them, but of course it was also an attempt to derogate the issues that I raise about basic civil rights for poor and homeless people, about how it is a civil rights and human rights violation to torture people at night by not letting them sleep in the city limits. And jokes about this or ignoring this or rationalizing this away as swing vote Mike Rotkin, Cynthia Matthews, Michael Hernandez, Mary Beth Campbell, and even Scott Kennedy do. And Kennedy has essentially been, unfortunately, on the other side of this issue, even though he tends to talk on both sides. It speaks for itself. What do you think, Linda?
Well, here's my 2 cents. This is the first time I've been in this particular broadcast station of Free Radio Santa Cruz. And the walls are full, and one of the bumper stickers here says, "The world wants peace, the weapons industry wants wars." When you read something like that in the Metro, you have to think, like, who wants hate crimes to continue? Where is somebody like that coming from? And the only sense I can make out of it, as if you could make sense out of hurting people on purpose, is that this is part of the same mentality that is exploiting the need for progress in the beach flats, the mentality that will plow people and other living beings under for the sake of some immediate profits. And war is what saves this economy from time to time, and people consciously and unconsciously are supporting it if they don't think. So that's kind of disgusting. I've seen crosses burned in front of churches. I've seen homeless people shot at by passing cars in the middle of the night who were trying to get a point across at the town clock. I don't want to see more hate in this city, so I agree with David.
I, on the other hand, have been kind of cynical and skeptical of, you know, anti-hate rallies. I've always thought that it's a little vague, you know, go after the fringe groups like the Klan and the Nazis who ignore the real protectors of hate who run the city council or who are in institutional positions of power in the banks and who control the housing. You know, I always thought if you really want to go for the targets, go for the people at the top. Don't just take, you know, pot shots at the loonies on the sidelines. And so I've always taken that view. And I remember I was having a card game the other day with a young man, and he said to me, he opposed the whole idea of there being additional penalties for so-called hate crimes, because he thought that was a way of simply discriminating against white people. Let's put it that way. He felt that if a crime is a crime, regardless of its motivation, otherwise you're engaging in a form of thought crime. In other words, if you assault someone, you assault someone. And, you know, whether your motivation is because that person is black or gay, or because you don't like their clothing, or because you got into an argument with them, that shouldn't make any difference. Now, at the time, I was kind of caught aback by that argument, but as I reflect on it, of course, the difference between first-degree murder and second-degree murder and third-degree murder is thought. That is to say, if you plan in advance to kill someone, that's first-degree murder. If you do so in anger, it's second-degree murder, and if you do so through negligence, it's third-degree murder. And all of it has to do, it's all the same act, but it has to do with the background behind it and the motivation, what was in your mind when you did it. So that's what I would have said to that young man had I been, had the wherewithal at the moment. Linda?
Yeah. I think that it's a shame we have to have laws specifically about hate, although we need more of them here in Santa Cruz, obviously. But I think it's sort of it flows naturally from the fact that most people who have to deal with the justice system don't really get to have a jury of their peers. Now you even have to pay for one if you ask for one, I understand. But in general, juries are composed of people who are predominantly white and predominantly owners of property, even if it's just their own house. It's a certain mindset. So you don't get a jury who can feel what you felt when somebody burned the church down or your house down or bombed where you live or is shooting over your head to scare you when you're already unable to lay down anywhere without becoming a criminal. I think it's a legitimate adjustment because the legal system doesn't work the way it was meant to for most of us.
Well, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. Certainly not hate Free Radio Santa Cruz, because another problem with this hate stuff in the studio. We've had some rather, in the collective, we had some heated discussions recently about people who go on the air who seem to be adopting positions of racism and hostility toward minorities. And I've always been of the view that idiots will reveal themselves, and that's pretty much what you do. You don't penalize people for being crazy or stupid. You let their stupidity and their lunacy work itself out. And I still pretty much take that position. That's, of course, before these same people started graffitiing the inside of the studio essentially meaningless graffiti, but that were vandalized much of what was in here, and that, of course, is different, and I see that as a form of act. So the issue of hate crimes is one that's controversial, and that's real in our community, and certainly actions that injure other people directly are matters for our concern. So is calling somebody a nigger or a kike or another term that is a form of free speech to do so. Yes, in a sense. In another sense, it is a form of assault, and it's real hard to say how to handle that for me. Maybe you should teach people to. You teach people how to engage in physical responses, or if you're nonviolent, how to engage in ostracism of a very pointed sort. I'm not sure. I don't know what to do with this issue. It's going to be continuing. I see, however, you have an announcement here that you wanted read, and perhaps you want to read it yourself. You probably can do that, Linda.
Thank you, Robert. These are health-related concerns that impact low-income people in our communities. And some people who are out about being poor are also often on the receiving end of verbal and other abuse. The Santa Cruz Board of Supervisors is considering expanding, they called it merging, its Medi-Cal HMO to include Monterey County. This seems like a good time to let those county bosses know about your other changes you think the state-mandated public health system needs, as well as your views on the merger idea. They claim they don't want to lose their local control, but I think there are other concerns too. Also, a recent change in state laws affecting mental health clients' needs. This is clients who are low income. The new law requires that they will be assigned psychiatrists now, and they cannot select their own caregivers if they're poor. This political move follows closely on the heels of recent mass patient dumping of developmentally disabled people statewide. A lot of people here are being pushed out of their group homes. If you need mental health, be forewarned about getting it from the county. If you have any influence, please use it to see that these disadvantaged people might have the same options others have.
Speaking of mental health, or the mental health racket, as I call it generally, since I've rarely seen anything positive come out of the institutionalized system of forced drugging, forced hospitalization, forced shock, forced surgery that it has been part and parcel of the so-called mental health industry since, well, certainly for the last 100 years. I had some conversation today with our psychiatric ombudsperson. His name is George Covello. A very interesting dialogue. I'm hoping to interview him in the future, though I think he may be constrained from doing this because this is a micro power radio, or pirate radio, as some would call it, even though we're one of the few accessible community radio stations available where you can actually say what you want to say and get on the air here. He is the person designated by the county to help people who are incarcerated with psychiatric labels in these supposedly non-prison, but actually coercive settings, psych wards. There's a thing called a 5150 under Health and Welfare Institutions Code 5150 that allows someone to be held for 72 hours against their will while they're observed for signs of a mental illness, or actually it's whether they meet the three criteria: danger to yourself, danger to others, or gravely disabled. I've talked on this show about one of the homeless activists, a very articulate writer, sometime violent individual, but usually not, a man who lives in his own van, Chris Brozda, who I've been on the receiving end of some of his abuse at different times. I've also been on the receiving end of some of his wisdom and reflections. He's done both, and he's currently being held in the Dominican psych ward after being held for over a month for the crime of, as I judge it, trying to eat some candy in a candy store. I guess it was, I keep forgetting the name of that candy store. It's right up the street from the coffee roasting company that he'd already purchased in Marini's, and he did so in a fashion that apparently they didn't like, and they weren't specific as to what his actual crime was. They didn't say he spat at anybody or threw anything on the floor. They didn't like his general appearance. Now, Chris is a big guy with a beard, often shabbily dressed, and he also has a huge hernia. He has had several operations to deal with it, but, you know, he does look kind of grotesque at times, and this apparently did not suit the upscale yuppie management of this particular candy shop. They called the police. Police told him to leave. And as he left, and he went into the coffee roasting company nearby, he apparently told the officer in a civil tone of voice that he really wished that he had an opportunity to have a fair fight with the police, and, you know, maybe they could charge admission or something. And they used this as a pretext to lock him up and violate his probation. And for those of you who don't know, probation is a procedure wherein courts gain extended control of you. If you don't serve a jail term, let's suppose you're in a political demonstration, you're sentenced to 30 days in jail. If you don't serve your jail term and instead you take, say, a year's probation, if you then have contact with the police, and that's actually considered a crime under these circumstances, you can have your probation violated, which means they can then hold you for up to the entire period of time of the potential sentence you could have gotten, not just the actual sentence, but the potential sentence, if I understand this correctly. So you are in serious danger if you accept probation, if you have any intention of being in public spaces where police might take a disliking to you, particularly if you're a protester like I am. Probation is a dangerous thing to take. I never take probation. I went to jail for serving free food, for example, in the summer of 1996 in San Francisco when they were going after food, not bombs, because we fed the homeless in public places. And they offered me probation, and I said, no, thank you. Put me in jail. And instead I went to jail for, I guess it was, they had a two-month sentence, and I served 27 days of it, and I was eventually released. But anyway, getting back to this mental health question, I was having interesting conversations with George, who kind of filled me in on some of the background of what the circumstances are for folks who are picked up by police and what's called 5150, or it's also, there's a thing called 5250. You can be 5250 if after the 72-hour period they decide they want to hold you for 14 days, that's called a 5250. And if they want to hold you then for a temporary conservatorship for a month, that's a 5350. These are new and exciting terms I learned today from George Covello, the psychiatric ombudsperson or helper. And it's interesting to hear that. You also have certain rights as an inmate in a psychiatric institution of a sort. The first right you always have is to try to get a writ of habeas corpus, which means a demand to go before the judge and demand that they release you or charge you with a crime. And in the psychiatric world, you can only be held if you are a danger to yourself, a danger to others, or gravely disabled. Now, Chris Brozda is now being held because they specify that he is gravely disabled. This after a 5-minute conversation with a psychiatrist in his jail cell, and after